Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast lore behind the Mass Effect games.
Welcome back to the Mass Effect Lorecast. This is your host, Tom. I'm here with Sam as usual, and it's been a little while. We took a week off. Sam's been moving. We had a fun episode about Space Jesus before that, and then I don't know if it was a few episodes before that, but Sam, you left me hanging on my favorite new story, the corporatist war on Garvug.
It sounds like something that we have just totally made up, doesn't it?
It totally does. I was going to start this off by saying, Sam, tell me more about my favorite story. It's been a while. Tell me more about the corporatist war on Garvug. That's if you asked a fourth grader to just make up a funny name, they would just, Garvug, that's funny, right?
It also just kind of sounds like the stereotypical, like, just say corporatist war on Garvug. And that right there is exactly how everyone who doesn't know a thing about Mass Effect perceives you talking about the lore of Mass Effect.
Right, right.
Like it is right. The most stereotypically nerdy shit. But I love it. I'm not judging at all. Of course, I'm here. So
Yeah. And calibrating will definitely come up at some point. So let's talk. We've got more to talk about. I thought the story was over last time. We got to the end of it. I was like, oh, that's it, right? And you were like, well, no, it's actually not. We have part two coming up. And so now here we are, part two. So where did we leave off? Like, let's bring everyone back up to speed, because it may have been a few weeks since I listened to that episode.
Yeah, so basically there were these corporations, right? Guanghui Solutions, Sonax Industries, and Binary Helix. Those are the three. And they're attacking this Krogan world after a coup that they helped organize, but that coup failed. Now they're attacking because they say that they want unlimited development rights on Garvug. And as a reminder, Garvug is this godforsaken, like, icy hellhole of a planet that really only the Krogan and Vorcha can live on. Mm-hmm. So that's where they are.
Mm-hmm. I get these pictures of, like, walking into a cafe and there's, like, Krogan and Vorcha just, like, sipping their coffee peacefully together.
What kind of music would be going on in that cafe? Probably not the same kind of cantina tunes from Star Wars.
I'm thinking early 90s industrial metal.
Yeah, I can see that.
That's what Krogan and Vorcha listen to. It totally makes sense, right?
I would also think like Breaking Benjamin.
Yeah, like some Ministry, some Breaking Benjamin, some early Nine Inch Nails, you know, like that kind of stuff.
Yes, like, exactly. Yeah. But all of the lyrics, of course, would be incomprehensible screeching. So,
oh, yes. Like they all have Vorcha as like lead singers, all of them. But anyway, OK, so let's get into it. Where do we go from here? Like this clearly continues to develop. What else is going on?
Right. There's been this apparent key victory from the corporation armies. They were surrounding and raiding this ancestral Krogan fortress, but they break in and it turns out that the Krogan leader they were after, Hyla Rund, he's not even there. So then their troops start combing the city and they're running into booby traps.
Right now, it
looks like all of a sudden this is not organized state military versus organized state military. This is, you know, asymmetric warfare, guerrilla warfare. That's what it's turning into. But we get another update from Cerberus Daily News. And here's what it tells us. It says Garvug's state-run forces, so the Krogans and the Vorcha, received another blow today when newly arrived corporate armies retook Garvug Systems' comm buoys. So the corporations have gotten these reinforcements. They've come into the system. They've recaptured the comm buoys. And it says, after a tense 2-hour battle, the state's finest retreated to FTL in order to avoid total destruction. Through the comm buoys, the corporatists can now direct communication to other planets that may wish to send reinforcements. Now, you remember in part one, when we were talking about the Krogan and the Vorcha armies, they were knocking out these comm buoys. Mm-hmm. Well, this was precisely why. They didn't want to let these corporations organize. And like I said, it wasn't going to be a blow to the Krogan and the Vorcha because they knew that no one was coming to help them.
Right, right. But if the corporatists got it, then they bring in reinforcements and now they're in even worse trouble. So that's where exactly. They're at. Like, is this the next thing? Do like reinforcements show up? Like, how does this go?
Yeah. So basically, their efforts to try and knock out corporate reinforcements are now null. Like, because the corporate reinforcements are there now, they're able to, you know, organize and coordinate across different systems and ask their other colonies and other planets to send reinforcements. So that's really not good news. And even though I don't really trust Cerberus Daily News, they are right on the money by saying that the Krogan and the Vorcha are really set back by this. But there is another element. When we talked about the galactic blowback from this corporate war, you know, corporations punching down on the Vorcha and the journalists, or the journalists were then in there, they were able to sneak cameras in. And what they captured in this war zone, they shared to the extranet. And these Citadel space based corporations were like basically universally perceived as the bad guys, mm-hmm. by like every average person, it looked like. And the general reception was met with protests. There were protests outside the corporate headquarters. But now the corporations have retaken the comm buoys. So now the corporations have retaken these basically distribution of communications, and how might that impact the messages that the press are sending out through them, right?
Right, right. And so the other side doesn't even have any line of communication at this point. So it's all the information is now through the corporatists.
Exactly. And as we know, propaganda is a huge, huge part of war, and it has a tangible impact.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so I mean, they were already outnumbered, and now they lack the ability to block communications from the corporatists. So it sounds like things are just getting worse.
They kind of are, yeah. And the next dispatch from Cerberus Daily News says, when asked if they will censor the media, they being the corporations, when asked if they will censor the media who have been relying on FTL ships using the mass relay to escape the system, Sonak's Supreme Commander Lyra Spate said, quote, anything that gives away vital battle space information or appears to be a coded transmission will be stopped. Aside from that, we believe in working hand in hand with the media to publicize what we anticipate to be a swift and relatively painless victory.
That's like, it's been brought to our attention that cigarettes do cause cancer, but don't worry, we're doing everything we can to donate to cancer foundations in your name. this terrible thing, but don't worry, it's fine. What?
They may as well have like ended that corporate statement with, and together we can make the world a better place.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. But we're clearly doing terrible things, so just ignore that. Don't worry about that stuff. It's for the right reasons. Just trust us.
You know, real quick, I do want to discuss the importance of journalism here in wartime, but first, I want to analyze this language that just occurred to me while reading this. Mm-hmm. What we anticipate to be a swift and relatively painless victory. That's a lot different than the verbiage they were using before, which was, you know, we're gonna take care of this very quickly. 3-day special operation.
Right, right, right. You won't even notice it. It'll be fine.
Now it's relatively painless.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it seems like they have to at least acknowledge a little bit of the truth of what's happening in order to then bend that truth a little bit more to what they want people to be perceiving.
Yeah, half-truths are always more effective than outright delusions and lies. But you know what? When they say here that anything that gives away vital battle space information or appears to be a coded transmission will be stopped, who is the judge of that?
Right, right. Yeah, it's the same dilemma of like, Yeah, I mean, this happened. We could go into dozens of examples of this, but I think everybody gets the idea. Like, the person in control defining a thing doesn't mean that they're not going to overreach with that definition in order to stamp out other things that they want to be in control of also. So,
especially if they're judge, jury, and executioner of this policy.
Right.
So,
you know, like making official decisions as president, for example.
Right. Yeah.
So everything's like official, so I can do whatever I want, you know, like that sort of thing.
I guess that's the law of the land now. God help us. God help but, you know, the journalism and wartime part is really interesting here for me because I learned about this in college. Right. I went to school for journalism. I got my degree in journalism. And there was this really interesting course I took, History of American Journalism. And if you are a history buff and you know, like, oh, this so-and-so newspaper reporter was on the battlefield, you know, in the Civil War, right? And that's how they were able to get so many intricate details. Maybe they were writing under a pseudonym. Maybe they were kind of a spy slash journalist. A lot of those journalists were able to get those details because modern operational security protections had not yet been installed to keep the journalists away from the war zones, away from the front lines.
Right. Yeah. By like World War II, that's very different.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And actually, the thing that I learned during that class was the pivotal war that changed a lot of the way that not just the U.S., but the modern world limited the restricted the access of journalists to war zones was the Russo-Japanese War. During that war, the Japanese military enacted very strict limitations on what journalists could see, what they could dispatch from, you know, back home. Everything basically had to go through the Japanese military and their government, if I can remember this correctly. I might be wrong. But basically, that other state militaries and other governments took that as a cue. They were like, you know what? We can control a lot of the messages that are coming out if we just restrict the access of these journalists a little bit more, only allow them to see what we want them to see, and through that, we can manipulate the flow of information that's going directly to our enemy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it's a very effective and yet dishonest tactic.
It's not transparent at all. No. However, you know, this, as the saying goes, all's fair in love and war, right? So when I said operational security, this is exactly what Lyra Spate here with Sonax Industries is talking about. She says anything that gives away vital battle space or information. Mm-hmm. Now, what could that be? That could be they don't want journalists publishing troop movements.
Right. Oh, right? Yeah. These are the placements of the troops. These are the tactics that are being used. These are the kinds of equipment that are on the field. There's a lot of information that if it gets in the hands of the other side could be very detrimental to the war effort. So, yes.
Especially dates, times, and movements. Yeah. Those could all be very critically exploited. And so from a tactical or a strategic standpoint, it makes total sense why any military would not want this published. However, you know, you add on to that the total lack of accountability that these corporations have, and you have a recipe for complete censorship.
Absolutely. Basically. Absolutely. Because they are the only governmental system out here outside of the Krogan. Like, there's not like an overseeing anything that they don't have to follow the rules of anybody else. They're just making it up as they go because they're out here in the middle of nowhere, basically. So, right. Okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, even without, you know, this information being potentially used by their enemy, it's going to the home front. And these corporations are still facing protests outside their headquarters, right? So war fatigue, home front morale, these are real things that have a very real impact overseas, maybe less so because you're a corporation, but corporations may not have to answer to voters, but they do have to answer to investors.
Yes. And the morale of any of the soldiers that they're bringing in as reinforcements. If those soldiers think they're going into an advantageous situation, then they're going to be in better spirits than if they think they're going to bail out a bunch of people who are failing. So that does have an effect, even though those people are hired, it still has an effect.
Exactly.
So, okay. So remember when we talked about the Krogan leader's body in the fortress, right? They still haven't found that. Like, what's going on with the whole situation?
Yeah, that is the big question that everyone is wondering at this point. He's becoming somewhat of a ghost. Hylot Rune, that is. He's becoming the ghost of Garvug, if you will.
Nice.
And nice. Yeah, you like that? I thought of that yesterday. he is becoming this elusive leader from the shadows. And here's the next dispatch that we get from Cerberus Daily News. It's titled, Garvug's ruler, Hylot Rune, remains at large. It says, counter to corporate military expectations, which basically just means they got caught in the woods with their pants down, the Hylot clan chieftain remains at large on Garvug. Though initially suspected to be among the dead in the clan fortress, Hylot Rune successfully retreated to the countryside.
Well, he's taking a nice little vacation day.
Yeah, like they really thought they had him, and then all of a sudden, guess what? Now he's not in densely populated urban warfare setting. He's out in the countryside, so it's even harder to get him now.
Right. Yeah, and I would imagine that most of that planet is countryside.
Yes. However, when our listeners think countryside, I feel like they're probably going to think rolling green hills.
Yeah, no, this is like, yeah.
Tundra.
Right. This is like the wasteland of this barren and empty planet. Yeah.
Right. And this has to have a huge bump to morale for the Krogan and the Vorcha, who are defending their own homeland. Their leader pulled off this miraculous escape, right?
Right. He survives under, you know, circumstances that nobody should expect to survive. Oh, it's a miracle. Like, yeah. Sure.
Somewhat of a shepherd-like reputation is gaining for this guy because he keeps pulling off the impossible. And so you can imagine there's a lot of anticipation. You know, he escaped, but he hasn't said anything. He hasn't appeared anywhere yet. And then he releases a radio broadcast. And he says, he breaks the silence, and in this Cerberus Daily News article, it says, in a radio broadcast, he belittled the corporatist invaders and exhorted his followers to fight them. Quote, we are clan, he roared. They are merely co-workers. If we make their victory cost them enough, they'll leave.
I mean, he's right, because it comes down to just profit and loss for corporations, so he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So this is exactly what you and I were talking about last time we addressed Garvug, Tom. You said, you know, they can win by hitting them where it hurts, right? In the money.
Yeah, it's a financial endeavor. If it's costing too much money and they're not going to see the profits they want, then they'll leave. Just like any business will cut their losses. They'll close down the shop and they'll move on to other ideas. Makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a risk and reward situation. That's the kind of conversation that's got to be happening in the boardrooms, you know, at this point. And then this radio broadcast breaks the silence. But let's talk about, at this point in the future, how archaic a radio broadcast is.
That's true.
Right?
That's true. Yeah, you would expect all sorts of other technology being used. But I guess it really shows that they're on their back foot. But it's also very similar to other guerrilla movements, other guerrilla responses in war, where they make use of outdated technology to still leverage some advantage. So it totally tracks.
Some outdated technology, because it becomes obsolete, it's inherently more secure.
Right.
Because no one else is tracking it. Now, I don't know if this is the same for radio waves. It doesn't seem like it in Mass Effect. It seems like they can probably still track this. And I'm also imagining, so here's what I'm imagining at this point. I'm imagining this hostile, icy world with one of its only cities in shambles. Its people are uncertain. And then they get confirmation that their leader is alive. So it's no longer just a rumor. He's no longer just the ghost of Garvug. He is alive. And this is coming directly from his mouth over a radio broadcast as those civilians who are left behind huddle around any radio they can find in the rumble. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So this is a very, you know, they're in their darkest hour, basically. And yeah. he's delivering this radio broadcast to them. And this is to an audience who's already grasping at any thread of hope.
Yeah. Yeah. But it may be enough.
If Vorcha are capable of
it. It may be enough. And on top of, yeah, they're capable of hope. But it may be enough. And on top of it, yes, the enemy can get those broadcasts as well. But you can leverage that in order to message things that throw them off or upset them. on top of that, you can't stop a radio broadcast unless you destroy the transmitter. Once those radio signals are in the air, they're in the air. You can't block it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Excellent point. But like you said, they would have to destroy the transmitter.
Right.
And broadcasting his own voice comes with a risk. The enemy gets those broadcasts too.
Yeah.
And so the next part of the Cerberus Daily News article says, Sonak's Supreme Commander, Lyra Spate, later responded in a press conference saying, I would like to thank Mr. Hylot for broadcasting from a radio tower so that we know exactly where he is. She mocked. If he thinks he will outlast us by causing financial and physical damage, he's unaware of the high value of his planet and the consortium's long-term strategic vision.
Yeah, so they're messaging back and trying to threaten him. But the trick here is that he doesn't have to physically be at that radio tower to transmit his voice. He could record his voice onto a device that goes into that radio tower and is delivered by somebody else, and he could be on the other side of the planet by the time that transmission goes out. And if they destroy that one radio tower, doesn't mean that there aren't dozens and dozens of others that he could be jumping between and just sending packages with messages to get delivered to them, right? So they could be more mobile than this implies. But I guess this still begs the question, is wrong. Everybody uses that incorrectly. This raises the question, what is so valuable about this situation that these corporations are willing to go to such extremes and lose so much just searching, just in order to get this, you know, basically hunt this guy down, but also just to take this one planet?
That is the big question, right? And it's not too attractive of a planet anyway. The corporations say that they want to just be able to develop and bioengineer and mine this planet freely. But are the corporations telling the truth? Because there are other planets, you know, that they could mine and you know, extract resources from, although there is unique biodiversity on this particular planet. It has very unique climate that they want to test on. But is it worth it? You know, that's the big question. And it comes down to, are the corporations telling the truth about why they want it? And this question does get answered. But first, the action takes a direct turn because of that radio broadcast that Hylot Rund sends out. Here's what we learn in a follow-up news report from Cerberus Daily News. Conflicting stories tonight out of Gar... Hold on, I'll do my reporter voice. Conflicting stories tonight out of Garvug, where corporate and state forces clash over a radio tower. State army units claim a victory, saying Hylot Rund led an ambush that destroyed two armored personnel carriers and shot down a Mantis gunship. Video exists only of the gunship, which is clearly in flames and being urinated on by Krogan forces.
That's great. That's great. Also, I think it's hilarious. In chat, Alan says he could be using a VPN to send his signal to the tower. This podcast brought to you by ExpressVPN, which may actually be running an ad currently as you're listening to this podcast. The Krogan also like ExpressVPN.
Certified Krogan approval. Yes. But in case you didn't catch that there at the end, video exists only of this gunship, which is clearly in flames and being urinated on by Krogan forces.
That's so good. I love it.
So urinated on the Krogans, not just, you know, I'm imagining the Krogans somewhat like the sand people from Star Wars, you know, over top of this right. gunship, and they're like
while they're peeing.
Yeah. So totally a Krogan move right there. And I gotta say, I can't blame them. You know, these corporations are the invaders, and definitely not a Krogan or a Vorcha would shed a single damn tear for any of them that were killed.
True. Very true. Yeah.
The other thing that's interesting to me here is that the corporations laid bare their intention to attack his radio tower at the press conference ahead of time. And then they just apparently follow through with it. At least that's according to what the Krogan side is telling the press, right? Here's what the corporate side is telling the press. The corporate consortium battling for Garvug say no planes were shot down and that their bombs killed over 100 Krogan and Vorcha infantry near the CXN radio tower. This remains unconfirmed. At the press time, the tower is known to be in corporate hands and Hylot Rund remains at large.
So basically, we can just say anything we want because there's no evidence.
Yeah, and it's unconfirmed. So look, let's examine what we have here. We have a claim from the Krogan army that they have been ambushed and that they repelled the ambush by destroying two APCs and shooting down a Mantis gunship. Now, part of that claim can be verified because there's video of the gunship in flames being peed on.
Right.
But the other part about the APCs, that cannot be confirmed. However, on the corporate side, their entire claim is unconfirmed. Even Cerberus Daily News, which might have a vested interest in this because of Binary Helix, even they say that the entire corporate claim is unconfirmed. But somehow, Cerberus Daily News also knows, I love this language, the tower is known to be in corporate hands. Okay, so that's not really attributing any source.
No.
How do they know this?
Right. Well, you know, people have been saying blah, 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 blah. Many are saying this. You know what somebody told me the other day, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, it seems like they've taken a page right out of the playbook of, well, we'll move on.
There's clear signs of manipulation of the press on both sides of this, you know, and there's a certain level of the fog of war that we often see during wartime, but it's exacerbated because of the speed of press. We're actually seeing this in our own world. If you've seen a lot of conflicting reports over what's going on in Ukraine after the Russian invasion of it, you know, this is why, because the speed of information that we get now, it only exacerbates the fog of war and the chorus of voices where you're like, I don't even know what to believe.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's too easy to just inundate people with too much information. And the news change every day. There's like a new headline for anything. And then all of a sudden we forget what the previous day was about. We don't just like sit on a story anymore for a week or a month.
To vet facts? Yeah, no.
No.
Because then by the time you put it out, guess what? The 21st century version of the paperboy, a.k.a. social media algorithms, they don't give a shit about your story anymore at all. The algorithms are not going to show it to people. So you just wrote it for nothing. But that's the way that it goes. So for the corporations, there's definitely this incentive to manipulate the press, who, remember, you know, we're getting all of this information from Cerberus. And like I said, they may or may not.
Highly trustworthy.
They cannot confirm.
Always vet the sources. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They cannot confirm whether they have an interest in Binary Helix or Guanghui Solutions or Sonax Industries. So how is Cerberus Daily News getting this confirmation that the radio tower is in corporate hands? Well, we don't know. So this is why I said at the part one of this storyline that we should take it with a grain of salt. But the other thing here is that, are the Krogan acting with that much foresight?
Yeah.
Have we seen any evidence thus far in the lore that Krogan do act with a lot of foresight? Or do they just want to be depicted as the victors? Is that why they're telling Cerberus Daily News, yeah, we repelled this ambush and we took out two APCs and look at us peeing on this Mantis gunship?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're just in reaction mode. That feels right.
Right. Rund was bold enough to broadcast his location right afterward, you know, in a show of bravado. But he also engineered an escape from certain death at that fortress.
Yeah.
So he does have some level of foresight, and maybe that's why he's the clan chief.
That's true. Yeah. But yeah, I guess there's a difference between him making decisions by himself and them having like a concerted effort around multiple people in order to manage information and things like that. Would be a much bigger thing to try to do, and probably outside the scale of most Krogan, would be my guess. So, all right, well, this is fun. I'm sure this is going other places, but we have to go thank our patrons, and we've got a new planet card, so don't go anywhere.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this
Lorecast
is mine. I like the sound of that.
All right. Well, it's been a few weeks. We had last week off, and then the previous episode before that was pre-recorded. So we have a number of new patrons to welcome. Thank you, everybody, for joining. Robert L. Kaiju 23 with lots of I's and O's. Cameron D. Superfly 440. Draco and Bankai. Welcome to the Patreon. So glad that you decided to join us. I hope you're enjoying all the things you're getting over there, the t-shirts and ad-free episodes, and joining us on Patreon chats, which is the next one's coming up in 2 weeks, right at the end of the month. So you still got time to sign up for that. And we have to shout out our Shepherd tier patrons, Draco, our newest one, Edboy, Kirisi, Lieutenant Tucino, Superfly, the other newest one, and William. Thank you to all of you for your support. Also, if you'd like to help out in other ways, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We have some new ones that came in, but the app that I have been using to go through and sort all of those is going through maintenance and has been for like the last 3 days. So it's driving me nuts. I can't pull up the reviews, but we'll cover those on the next episode. Don't worry. You'll get your review read. Also, you can rate the show on Spotify. You can share it with your friends. All of that stuff absolutely helps. So thank you for your support. Now let's move on to the planet card. Where are we talking about this week, Sam?
Oh, I told you I was going to send you that Edie sound clip, and I forgot to.
Oh.
That one's on me. We'll do it next week. But this planet card is one of my favorite planets, Antorum. And if this sounds familiar, that's because this is the location of the shifty space cow who steals your money.
Yeah.
This is where you find him. So here's the planet card. Though Antorum's surface is uncomfortably hot, its nitrogen-oxygen atmosphere and abundant shallow seas make it an ideal candidate for habitation by most known species. Unfortunately, the orbit of the moon of Thonol has been slowly decaying since the system coalesced. Its proximity is beginning to have tidal effects, and its dynamo-like revolution through Antorum's magnetic field is generating increasing powerful electrical storms. While some have suggested emplacement of mass effect drives in an attempt to lighten the moon and correct its orbit, the scale of such a project, tens of thousands of drives, costing enough to bankrupt the governments of all the Citadel races, make it a pipe dream. A multiracial effort is underway to catalog and preserve the unique genetic diversity of Antorum's vibrant young biosphere. Exogeny Corp and Heyuan? I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Heyuan?
Genomics represent the alliance's share of the effort.
Yeah, that's a very creative way of trying to adjust to the orbit of a moon. I mean, I guess they have the tech to do it, but yeah, like it says, it would cost way too much money.
Yeah, enough to bankrupt all the Citadel races. Yeah,
right. That's amazing. That's amazing.
I don't think the payoff is really there. And that's why I chose this one, because it's like a risk reward for corporations. I don't know if the payoff is really there.
Yeah. It's a cool thing, though. Like moons adjust their orbits over time. That's a really cool concept. And then they become tidally locked. And there's all sorts of cool physics around that if you want to look that up. But all right. Well, there's our planet card for this week. Let's continue with the rest of the story about the war. Here we go.
Spit it out. Or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
Okay. So at this stage in the war, Hylot Rund has slipped through their fingers now a few times. Like, how does this keep happening? I mean, it's not like Krogan are known for their sneaky subterfuge skills. Like, they tend to be very loud and bold and big. How does this keep happening?
You're right.
Right?
And that has to be what these corporate board members are grilling their commanders about. He's a fucking Krogan. How has he escaped again?
How do you lose a Krogan? He's not a Shih Tzu.
He's not a Pijack. They paid good money to these troops just for some backwater Krogan clan chief to escape being surrounded inside a castle and then ambushed at a radio tower. Both times, the corporation supposedly knowing his exact location before acting. Mm-hmm. But, as has been the case thus far, neither side is quitting. The Krogans and the Vorcha are once again energized, and the corporations are doubling down on their bets. Here's the next dispatch from Cerberus Daily News. It says, corporate forces hunt for clan chieftain Hylot Rund on the planet Garvug. Enters a new phase tonight. Okay, I see. The corporate forces hunt.
Right, it's possessive.
That was weirdly written. Experts in fugitive recovery are arriving from notorious planet places like Omega to hunt down the former head of state. Drones and search aircraft are scouring the hills near Dazil, and Binary Helix has imported two units of Varin handlers in attempts to literally catch the chief scent.
So they're sending like hunting dogs.
Yeah.
It's the equivalent of space hunting dogs to track this guy down.
They are pulling in a lot of resources from a lot of different places. So clearly they're both mad, right? They're mad that he's escaped this many times, but they're also analyzing the risk and they think that this is totally worth it to take him out. So, wow, they are pulling all the way from Omega, other places. They're bringing in experts in fugitive recovery. They're deploying search aircraft and drones.
Right.
I mean,
right. They're kind of pulling up all the stops. I mean, especially the Omega part. Like when you start hiring a bunch of criminals to do your work for you. That's, I mean, they're really reaching there at that point, right? Like they are corporations. Yeah, I mean, they're supposed to stay a little bit above board.
How different is this from like hiring private military contractors?
Yeah. But I think the difference is the public perspective. A private military contractor seems to be like vetted by the government and therefore seems up and up. Bounty hunters and the kinds of scum that hang out in Omega, not so much. That messaging gets put around and all of a sudden they start looking really bad to the general public.
Oh, sure. Yeah. However, some reports of Blackwater would tend to disagree.
That's true. And, that's true. Yeah.
But on the whole, yes. Yeah, you're right. I guess the private military contractors in this capacity are like the corporate forces who have then subcontracted out their own things to Omega bounty hunters. It's getting a little out of hand. And it goes one step further. You remember we were talking about censorship. Well, the phones of soldiers, reporters, and civilians alike are being confiscated so that if Hylot makes a call, his cellular frequency can be easily picked out to triangulate his location. That's at least the stated reason anyway.
Sure, yeah.
It says, quote, when he reaches out to touch someone, we're going to touch back, promises Lieutenant Sherry Spindelmeyer. Okay, whatever, Lieutenant Spindelmeyer.
Okay.
Quote, I don't think anyone wants to be within crater radius of him right now.
Because they're just going to blow him apart.
Right, more bravado. And, you know, not to equivocate someone infamous to this Krogan, the Krogan 1,000% has acted more morally than this person, but the language which the corporate forces are now using, it echoes a lot of the same rhetoric that we heard from the U.S. military during the hunt for Osama bin Laden.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a dated poll. But yeah, I mean, that was a very, very big thing, and I mean, and I'm sure there were a lot of shady things going on about the way that they managed that. Like,
maybe so. You know, I'm not too sure, but I know that this game did come out. Mass Effect 2, that is, came out in 2009.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so back then, Osama bin Laden was still on the loose.
Yeah. Yeah. And the American government and the American people at that point would have said pretty much okay to any method to bring somebody like that to justice because of what they did. So.
I still remember very clearly when Obama had that, you know, presidential address that interrupted, you know, TV programs and whatnot. Yeah. So I can imagine that situation may have had an impact on the writing specifically of this part of the story arc.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about the situation again. Kind of the corporations have brought in all these extra resources, right? They're really doubling down on tracking him. And most of this planet is not rolling fields. It's icy tundra. So, how many places are there to hide? At some point, this is future technology, too. They've got to be able to find him with this much effort, right?
And they do. The next update that we get from Cerberus Daily News shows the corporate armies tracked his location until he got inside of a convoy and then headed to the hills. And here's what it says. It says, corporate forces on the planet Garvug believe they've killed the opposition leader Hylot Rund in a so-called decapitating strike. Special ops soldiers made a positive ID on his convoy and followed it to a ranch house in the hills north of the city of Ikrit. They then painted the house with a laser designator that helped a Raptor drone shoot a rapid-fire mass accelerator directly into the living room. Now only a flaming crater indicates where the house once stood. DNA samples from the wreckage have been sent back to Binary Helix Laboratories in the city of Jundrag, where they will be analyzed and compared to the information on Hylot's metacard.
Okay.
I mean, this reeks of the global war on terror, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah, it does feel very similar. It also feels like the kind of thing where they could claim that they killed him and there's no evidence left. So other than his voice showing up again, you know, like what else?
Right.
You know, like, did it really happen that way?
You know, it sounds plausible that he could have been killed because, you know, it was. Cerberus Daily News tells us this very same week they were sending out these dispatches to players like, you know, every few days and or every week. Yeah. And in that very same week, the Cerberus Daily News tells us that Rund has already posted a video to the extranet mocking the corporations yet again. And this video goes on for 30 minutes, basically rallying all who are left to fight among the Krogan and Vorcha and to hit them with asymmetric guerrilla warfare until the corporations leave.
Nice.
Here's a quote from Rund. "I'll save you some time," he said. "That DNA you're analyzing was some other hump. They've moved..." Some other hump.
I love that Krogan would call other Krogan a hump.
Yeah, it feels like a Krogan term for dude.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. "They've moved into our house," he said. "Now it's time for them to pay the rent."
Yeah, this feels like a good old boy who's just like calling it as he sees it, you know? You know what else would have been really smart if he is somebody who's thinking ahead is to leave recordings like that for the Krogan to play to pretend that he's still alive, to really mess with them. You know, like, okay, what are all the different ways you could kill me? I will acknowledge each of those on a separate recording and then play this after they claim to have killed me so that it drives them nuts. So they're like, wait a minute, did we really kill him? What's going on?
Krogan playing 5D chess and outsmarting the corporations. I don't know if Rund is that smart to do it, but it's certainly this game of cat and mouse. And at this point, you've got to be thinking, every day that Rund survives, he wins.
Oh, yeah.
Every single day he survives. That's all he has to do. Because every day the corporations are spending more money and their bottom line gets a little bit closer. And he clearly knows this. But what's shocking to me is the corporation's complete intelligence failure. And I'm not calling them dumb. They are dumb. But what I'm saying is...
Not that kind of intelligence.
Yes, not right. That kind of intelligence. I'm saying that they're just completely ill-prepared and they're in unfamiliar territory and they have all these resources and yet their intelligence operations are completely failing them. Mm-hmm. They've obviously underestimated these Krogan and Vorcha. That's said and done. But now there's repeated intelligence failure after repeated intelligence failure. And now I really won't be surprised if we start seeing supply lines crack because it's been too much time and their troops are under the pressure of Garvug's extreme climate.
Would you maybe call this the corporation's own personal Vietnam?
Kind of feels like it's getting there, yeah, because they're too stubborn to adjust the game plan.
Right. Okay, so does the corporation, the corporations, plural, do they like respond to this in any way? Like, what do they do?
Oh, yeah, they have to save face at this point, right? Because like I mentioned, this isn't just about pride like it might be with a nation state. This isn't about gaining votes because, you know, the CEO is going to be in power no matter what the, you know, average voters want. This is about inspiring confidence in investors. So Sonax Industries sends another time they're sending out Lyra Spate, their supreme commander, in front of the camera. And Spate says, "Hylot Rund is a head of state. He should learn that picking up a rifle doesn't make you a soldier, and talking into a video camera even less so." Ooh. That's a weak sauce response, to be honest.
Yeah, snap. He snapped back real good, Lyra Spate. Not. I'm using old slang to make fun of you, Lyra Spate.
Yeah, like, Hylot Rund isn't even really that cool.
Oh my god,
it's basically what?
Like, does he even know how to wear jeans the right way?
He's like not even a soldier.
Like, I bet he's never even shot anybody ever. Like, ever.
This was a corporate communications messaging that was done on the fly. I guarantee, like, all these reporters were beating down their door when Rund posted another video, and they didn't really plan for this eventuality. So, like, 15 minutes before the press conference, they're like huddling, scrambling, saying, "What should be our messaging? What should be our messaging?" Mm-hmm. And the Supreme Commander's like, "I don't like any of that. I'm just going to go in front of the camera because we have to say something."
Yeah. Yeah. We'll just make it up on the spot. And then this is what you get. So
this is what you get.
Nice. Good one.
Yeah.
Good one. You're going to keep your job for a long time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Total failure on every front in the intelligence aspect. Supreme Commander goes in front of the camera. Very weak public relations messaging. And of course, as we talked about in the last part of the episode, or the last part of this arc, you know, the late night talk shows are already making fun of the dynamics here.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we can get into that a little bit more when we cover this in part three.
Part next three. Week. It's not over
part
yet.
Three.
What?
Well, there's probably going to be a part four, too. I'm just letting you know now.
There's still a lot of stuff. Awesome. Awesome. Well, this is fun. I mean, this is a fun topic, and it's also fun because it's kind of outside the general experience of the games. So it's very cool. I'm glad you've put this together like this. I hope everybody else is enjoying this as much as I am. But yeah, there we go. That's the end of this part two, the second episode. We'll be back with a part three later. And until then, stay safe out there. But Sam, you got anything else going on you want to share before we head out?
Yeah, like we mentioned, you know, at the beginning, I've moved. I'm in my new townhome now, so I got a lot more space. Hopefully, my video and audio quality is better for those of you who tune into my Twitch streams. Speaking of which, I am streaming in the middle of the week now. I've started a new game, first playthrough. Mm-hmm. I'm playing Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah.
And my gosh.
That's a good one.
That game is amazing.
Yeah, it's great.
I love that game so far.
I don't think I ever finished it. I need to go back and finish it, but I'm going to like totally forget all the controls at this point. Like,
it's not nearly as difficult to pick up as like a Souls-like. The combat's not that hard.
Right.
But I'm very much enjoying it. The cinematography is just amazing. The game is beautiful. Loving the story so far. Anyway, I'm streaming that every Wednesday when I have time, but every Saturday I'm continuing my modded Mass Effect 3 playthrough where I'm going with my headcanon playthrough. And that is every Saturday. Anyway, if you want to catch me, live, just follow me on Twitch at N7 Legend. You can also follow me on Twitter. I tweet out every time I'm live too. So
yeah, go check out Sam's streams. I've been streaming a little bit more recently as well. This last week, my son went back to school, so I've been getting up real early in the morning and driving, and then I've got like all day. So I've been knocking out a lot of the work I need to do, and then sometimes in the afternoons I get some time. So I've been doing some Skyrim like modded playthroughs. Dude, have you tried the Lorim Wabajack pack? Have you heard of this? There are 3,500 mods in this one pack. It is incredible. Some of it was broken. I had to reinstall all of it today.
Oh, for sure.
I tried to get to work.
Oh, my God.
But
3,500 mods?
Yes. I tried that out. There's another one that was just graphics plus the new dismemberment mod that I added into it. So when you fight enemies and hit their arms, it like chops their arms off and stuff, which is so good because it's like stuff like that happens in Fallout, but it doesn't happen in Skyrim, but now it does. I've been having a lot of fun with that stuff and live streaming those. So Robots Radio on Twitch, come. That's where we do this show every week. But then you can also come join me for live streams for that stuff as well. And of course, there's
I got the Skyrim VR recently.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
And I figured you have that.
Yes,
right?
Yes. It's so incredible. Have you done it yet?
Not yet. I bought it. I'm planning to stream it, but I don't know how to stream a VR game. So I'll hit you up about that offline.
Yeah, you have to project it onto a monitor and then capture the monitor.
Makes sense. So, So, I almost forgot to bring up. I'm also like, I mentioned it like months ago. Anyway, we're on episode 4 of the Avengers audio drama.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
I've continued to voice Jarvis.
That's great.
So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Keep up with that. Search it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you'd find your podcast, or YouTube, Avengers Audio Drama. And keep your ear out for me. I am voicing Jarvis. I just recorded lines for part 4. Mm-hmm. That's being worked on now.
Awesome. Okay, so the first thing you have to do in Skyrim VR is, of course, create a character and get playing. But go into like Bleak Falls Barrow and just walk very quietly, slowly through the beginning of that and just look around, like take in all the spider webs and the size of the room when you're in it. That stuff is incredible. Like the feeling of actually being in the space and how creepy it is when you're actually in there is really good. And then the next thing you have to do is find an apple. Go find a town, somebody's house, pick up an apple, and then hold it up next to somebody's head and marvel at the scale of the objects. Because when you're looking at it on a 2D screen, you don't realize that the objects have been scaled up. But when you are actually in 3D and you pick up an apple, it's the size of a guy's head.
And oh, that's amazing.
It's amazing. All the objects are just slightly big. And it's awesome. You need to go try that.
Can you throw those objects at people and they actually, like, the physics impact them?
The physics doesn't. It'll just hit them and fall. But there are mods that do allow you to do things like that, like including picking up people. Or, like, I did videos a while back where I was picking up little kids and throwing them. But you can mod it to do stuff like that. It's hilarious. So, yeah, it's like hours and hours of fun. So yeah, I picked up cats and was like petting them.
Aw.
It was great.
Definitely great. Don't throw the cats.
Definitely not. Man, can you imagine doing Mass Effect in VR? Oh, that would be so cool too.
There's already a Mass Effect POV mod where you can do first person POV. So I wonder if anyone's jerry-rigged that to do Mass Effect VR. That'd be sweet.
There are some mods that allow you to play 2D games in VR where you just, it basically moves the camera perspective up. But then you still use a controller, so you're not actually using your hands the way you like. So you can still kind of get a sense of that. I wonder if some of those work in Mass Effect. I haven't looked, but yeah, that would be really cool too. Like using those guns and like your biotic powers. And oh my god, that would be so cool in VR. All right. Well, I hope you have fun with that. Everybody, we've gone on a little bit extra at the end here about VR games and other things. Hope you enjoyed the episode. And we will be back next week. So we've got another episode for this and then our patron chat. And you're welcome to join us for that as well. And I hope you have a wonderful week. And we will see you next time. Stay safe out there. Thanks for tuning in to the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.